Hi, everybody. I'm Brittany Lewis with Forbes Breaking News. Joining me now is Congressman Warren Davidson. Congressman, thank you so much for joining me.
It's definitely an honor. Thank you.
Speaker Mike Johnson recently unveiled his foreign aid plan, and this includes separate bills to send support to both Ukraine and Israel. Have you had a chance to look at the legislation yet?
We've looked at the top line. We've got folks going through the details right now. And, you know, the controversial part is, what is this package going to look like? And, you know, there is a rule vote before the vote on the individual topics. And that's really where the controversy is, because the rule normally passes on party line vote. And this isn't an issue that really unites Republicans. It does divide Republicans. And it is important to have the granularity of individual votes. And part of the controversy is, do they get merged together at the end, or do they stay separate issues to be sent to the Senate?
Does it look like they will be staying separate issues or merged later down the road?
I think the current plan is to merge them into one bill at the end and have three separate votes. And then under a separate rule, instead of bundling things together that would include border security for America, they would do that as a separate bill. But that has no effect. It's essentially a revote on something that we already passed, which was H.R. 2, a border security bill that unites House Republicans, and would actually force policy changes on the Biden administration. So the only way the Senate will really take it up is if it were attached. So I think the only way you would get broad support from Republicans is if H.R. 2 were included into the MERV, as it's called, that would combine the bills and make the Senate have to address border security.
Does it look like H.R. 2 is going to be included there?
It doesn't look like it. I think they're going to do a separate rule that's essentially, you know, a variation on what the Senate's supplemental plan is. So it might be that you would get individual votes on the components, but it's essentially the Senate's bill. So there's a debate about whether there will be amendments made in order and what the range of those amendments are. So in essence, we could send over something that the base is very similar to the Senate's bill, but it ultimately gets altered by the amendment process in the House. So we'll see how that plays out. But again, I'm not sure that there's a path to pass the current rule.
Okay, so I know that you've only read the top line part of the legislation so far. You haven't had a chance to parse through all of the details, but the biggest chunk of money would be going to Ukraine, over $60 billion. How do you feel about that?
Well, I disagree with it. I've had, I think there's around 10 members of the House that have never voted for a dime for Ukraine. I'm one of them. And it's not because I'm not sympathetic to Ukraine. I was inspired, like, you know, really the world and certainly his countrymen, when Volodymyr Zelensky said, I don't need a ride, I need ammunition. They turned and fought and frankly achieved far more than even our own intelligence agencies said they believed was going to happen. They thought that the country would potentially collapse in days or weeks. And the reality is they've essentially fought to a draw in the East. And so they haven't had great success pushing Russians out of Ukraine, but they have held Russia from fully consuming Ukraine. And so that's inspiring. But the trouble is, when they've got this vacuous phrase, as much as it takes, as long as it takes, that's not a mission. That's a recipe for disaster. And I think the implication that they're counting on people believing is that this money is as much money as it takes for as long as it takes to kick all the Russians out of Ukraine. The problem is Ukraine clearly doesn't have enough combat power on their own to kick the Russians out of Ukraine. So what mission could be achieved? And you think, well, it buys time to negotiate some sort of peaceful resolution to that. But the Biden administration has scuttled the diplomatic process that by accounts, Ukraine wanted to enter into. So those efforts were scuttled by the Biden administration. And so what does the Biden administration really want? Well, Victoria Nuland says regime change in Russia, including war crimes tribunals for Russia. And that's consequential because she's the deputy secretary of state. So she really is kind of the operational person for a lot of the activities of the Department of State. So unless they can clarify what the mission is for our money and add a oversight function that is missing for where those dollars are being spent and how they're being used, I don't think there's any way that anyone in the House should support this bill, and I certainly won't support it.
You didn't support it, like you said, 2 years ago. And you said that you had the same sentiment. You said that you support their right to self-determination, but essentially, this isn't the United States' fight to fight. And you posted this on X within the past few days. Why America should seek peaceful resolution in Ukraine rather than an expansion of the war. So, how do they do that without foreign aid help?
Well, look, they do need foreign aid, and part of the lifeline that they've been able to establish is because they got foreign aid. But when they don't have a blank check, they do start to confront, well, okay, what really are our options? And they did that early on. By the first summer of 2022, they were confronting that reality. And unfortunately, the Biden administration scuttled that. And the part that the Biden administration won't level with the American people on is Ukraine can't accomplish the mission of getting all the Russians out of Ukraine on their own. Frankly, they need ground combat power, they need air combat power, and they need sea power supplied by someone like the United States or NATO member countries. So the path that the Biden administration is holding out, and frankly, if Speaker Johnson puts it on the floor, the path he will be joining hands with them in is an expansion of the war. The only way you're going to get Russia out of Ukraine is an expansion of the war. And they won't take off the table certain things that would help the diplomatic negotiations, like what is the role of Ukraine in NATO. And so, as long as that's the case, there will be combat. And as long as there's combat, unless someone else joins the war, in a long war, Russia has more combat power than Ukraine does.
If there were conditions on this Ukraine aid, would you vote for it? Or can nothing change your mind? You're not supporting this legislation, just like you haven't in the past 2 years.
Yeah, there's nothing that looks imminent that would support it. We could pass conditions if it is subject to amendment that would make it a version that I would support. But then, from talking to my colleagues, most of them would no longer support it. They essentially want the expansion. They want the implied absolutist position that, Western civilization hangs in the balance. Putin can't be allowed to prevail. Well, the only way that they're going to make sure that happens is to expand the war. They're just not leveling with the public on that.
What do you think about that type of commentary? Western civilization hangs in the balance. Some have said if Ukraine does not receive any foreign aid, Russia steamrolls Ukraine, a World War III breaks out. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's a real possibility, and I think it's unfortunate. Look, Ukraine is not a member of NATO, and NATO member countries, including the United States, are acting as if Ukraine is a member of NATO. And you've got NATO member countries, the European Union, they have their own currency. They're not over there running their money printer at the same rate the United States are. They're not even fully funding their own defense. I mean, the country of Germany has almost no debt. The United States has a debt to GDP ratio as high as we had at the end of World War II, and everyone in the world expects America to just poof the money into existence. If you hadn't noticed, the treasury market's not going well. The debt clock's running up at $1 trillion extra debt per 100 days for the United States. And we passed an omnibus bill, the speaker's two-step omnibus bill, that has a $1.9 trillion deficit. Once this supplemental omnibus for Ukraine passes, it'll essentially be $2 trillion. It's like 1.9 trillion is not quite enough debt. We should add 2 trillion. This is a terrible plan. Bankrupt countries are hard to defend. And the other thing that's abhorrent about this plan is it does nothing to secure America's borders. Border security is national security. When I go back home, my folks in my district want us to defend our country first. And they're sympathetic to our friends and allies like Israel and Ukraine, and frankly, all through the Pacific region. There's broad support for our allies, but the idea that America is supposed to fund all the wars and fight all the wars is not a popular position.
To your point, I mean, this is obviously expensive. We're talking about tens of billions of dollars additionally 2 years later. But if you do think that World War III is a possibility, is sending aid now to Ukraine less expensive than, let's say, Russia steamrolling Ukraine and then starting a World War III and then invading a NATO country, forcing the United States to get involved?
Well, I think that the best thing to do is avoid that. And the way to avoid that is to quit escalating the conflict and to get into the diplomatic phase. And the United States is unwilling to, frankly, even allow Ukraine the sovereignty of entering into negotiations. They're extending this aid and support for rebuilding Ukraine under the premise that, well, if you back the administration, the Biden administration, we're going to be there for you. But if you're not, then you're on your own. So they've really left Zelensky in a real box canyon. He doesn't have an easy path for a peaceful resolution, and he doesn't have enough resources to win. I mean, we could send him $500 trillion. He doesn't have enough manpower and operational skill to use all the tools in a long war to prevail against Russia. And look, there's a path like Afghanistan with low tech in a long period of time, waited out Russia in the 80s, and frankly, they waited out the United States in the 2000s. But that's a really long war, and no one's really leveling with the public or the people of Ukraine as to the range of options they're confronting.
Can you take us inside the conversations with your colleagues on this issue? What has been the temperature on this newest round of foreign aid in the House? And is there any indication that it's looking like it's going to pass because there is a vote on Saturday?
Yeah, so there are clearly the votes for this to pass in the House. There are, big government Republicans and big government Democrats, and they think the solution to every problem is more government. So the small government folks are kind of outnumbered. That's how we're $34 trillion in debt. It is bipartisan, but it is not reflective of what the American people want. I think they want us to find a peaceful solution if we can, and if there's a war, they certainly want us to be sympathetic to the good guys, the people that were invaded, but they, I think, would have liked us to avoid getting into the war. And the reality is, giving them more money right now is an expansion of the war. So the more wars in more places, people seem to prevail in Washington, D.C., but I believe that's at odds with what the American people actually want.
In this conversation about foreign aid, there have been, as you know, calls to oust House Speaker Mike Johnson. And Congressman Thomas Massie said he would co-sponsor Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene's motion to vacate. And he's also called for Johnson's resignation. Are these calls you echo? Do you think Speaker Johnson should resign?
Well, I think Thomas Massie's point when he made that was the motion to vacate is going to be brought up, and there will be enough votes for Speaker Johnson to be vacated unless he covers with Democrats. And so Thomas Massie's point was you should simply announce your resignation so we don't have to do it in the chaotic way that was done last fall. So, Thomas Massie and I both thought that it was a bad idea to vacate the chair with Speaker McCarthy. We said it wouldn't really work out well. It clearly hasn't worked out well, but it was very problematic. Everything just ground to a halt. And I think Thomas Massie's point was, if we're going to do this, and it looks like we are, then let's do it in an orderly fashion. And I think that point maybe has been missed, and it's all about like, well, how do we get rid of Johnson? Are they going to get rid of Johnson? Who would be the next speaker? And I think part of the challenge is we never really worked together as a conference to unite behind a plan, and we united behind a person. And the person, frankly, if Mike Johnson asked to be Speaker of the House and said his plan was to do the things that he's done, there's no chance he would have gotten the votes to be Speaker. So, there's some buyer's remorse across the conference.
You're feeling buyer's remorse. Do you have confidence in his leadership? Do you think he should resign?
Well, I hope he changes direction. He changed direction a little bit for a while. On Monday, he announced a plan. He got some feedback, and it was like, yeah, well, don't go that way. And so he listened to a lot of my colleagues all night last night. I think, from like 9 o'clock till midnight, I guess they met, kind of views across the range of conference. Unfortunately, this morning, he's announced a plan that frankly further isolates him amongst conservatives. And basically says, yeah, I've just decided to join complete forces with the bipartisan kind of Cheney wing of the Republican Party, more wars in more places, and the neocon Democratic Party that wants more wars in more places. They want surveillance. He flipped on FISA. He was a strong champion for reform when he was on judiciary. And then once he became speaker, he's in a different place. So, like I say, in the market, they have a saying, past performance does not guarantee future results and or future returns. And I think that's the thing here. Past performance, how he got the job, but the current results aren't supporting a united Republican front behind him.
So would you vote to oust Speaker Johnson if it came down to it?
Well, I hope we can avoid that. And, you know, my view is to try to point out where the landmines are and help Speaker Johnson navigate them successfully so that we can actually work together as Republicans. Look, we only have a majority if we do work together as a team. I acknowledge that's very tough. And, you know, frankly, I'm not a fan of a range of things that Speaker Johnson has decided to do. But I think it shouldn't go unnoticed or underappreciated that even though I was completely at odds with the outcome on the FISA debate last week, we were able to have that debate. And we had recorded votes on single subjects. And we didn't get all the amendments in order that I thought should be in order. But we had the debate. And now the American people know where all the members of Congress stand on really important and very divisive issues. And I think, look, that's what a legislature is supposed to do. And that's how the people back home keep score and know who stands where on the issues. And in that sense, we get the right reinforcements here in Washington, D.C. If you've got an informed voter and an active voter participation, you trust that eventually the legislature truly is going to reflect the will of the people.
Congressman Warren Davidson, thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed our conversation. You're welcome back anytime.
Yes, yeah, same. Thank you so much.